love, kindness, human connection. These are some of the things we talk about on the Danny Painter Show. It's a thing. This show is intended for a more mature audience. We might sometimes say bad words.
So we've actually been trying to do this for a very long time. And Cher and I have known each other for a bit now through our mutual friend, Ronaldo Schwab, who did the documentary feature Skiff, which Cher is part of. And this is going to be a learning experience, I think. I want Cher to teach me all of the things, to check me where I am wrong, and hopefully she can do the rest for that for you as well. So Cher, welcome to my home. I'm really excited to be here.
I know, and I've not actually been to your physical home yet. At one time I was in Johannesburg, you know, we missed it a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's so lovely to be here with you after so long.
Oh my gosh, yeah, we used to, I used to get drunk and everyone used to watch me get drunk on house parties. Now it's changed to just get drunk alone and everyone else lives their best lives. So talk to me about, so I know why I wanted to interview you. I think you are one of the most inspirational humans I've ever met, legitimately. And just your authenticity and your transparency about the journey that you're currently on. And we'll get into that and we'll share all of that. But tell me a little bit about your background. Where are you from? What were you as a little human? Like, tell me that. I want to hear about the foundation of your life.
Yeah, so I'm from the city of Cape Town, sprawling metropolis, as they love to call it. Yeah, and I grew up in Cape Town, sort of in an area called Kales River, with mom and dad, brother and sister. So I have two older siblings. They're much older than me, so I'm what people would call a lakamiki. And essentially, like, it was very weird, I would say. Like, normal people have this upbringing where, you know, the youngest child has, what do you call it, like, young kid syndrome, where, you know, the eldest one sort of is like the independent one and the middle one is the problem child. And I think that sort of like set a bar, because my siblings are so much older than me. There was a sense of like, you need to be independent and be able to do things on your own, because we're all adults and like you're the only one who's essentially a child. So like I kept to myself quite a bit, but I was very talkative, always been quite talkative. And I think for my parents, that was one of the things where they were like, they struggled. But it's funny because they're all quite talkative. So, you know, it was kind of like this family of people who just love expressing themselves and love being creative and love talking. But there was always something about me that was slightly different. And I think for my parents, it was quite hard to comprehend being a person of color. You know, I say person of color as if it has an impact on the access to knowledge, but it kind of does in a sense where, you know, people of color usually don't, you know, access, let's say, like psychologists or psychiatrists or therapy or that sort of thing up until recently. So it wasn't something that my parents really understood what being trans was. And I think to them, especially in the colored community, so to speak, you know, words get thrown out, morphe off, those sort of the F-bomb, which I don't think is great, but those are sort of words that were then given to me because I was quite effeminate, which is funny because right, like at this point in time, I don't think of myself as being quite feminine. But yeah, so I was quite effeminate, and it was something that I think was thrown around not only by people external from my own family, but also in my family. And it is just one of those things, I guess we can't excuse it by saying it is just one of those things, but if you don't really understand something, how do you sort of address it? So yeah, I grew up like that, and I went to primary school at a school called La Viance, which was a great school because it really allowed me sort of a space of freedom to express myself creatively. And yeah, and then high school in the city, where I really got to experience, I traveled in using the train with my mom because she worked in Cape Town. And it was always quite fun to be able to engage with different people on the train. And for me, it was a space where I did my homework or, you know, I was reading. And that always was for me, like books just became something that I engaged in and read quite a lot to sort of distract myself from the reality of the situation that I was in. And, you know, I don't know who I am and I don't know how to figure it out. And back then it was like, I mean, I didn't really have access to the internet at that age until getting to high school. And even then, you know, nothing sort of, I didn't really figure it out on my own. And I've always heard about people being trans, but they use quite an outdated term called transvestite, which didn't sit right with me. And it, all the sort of people I saw represented in the media, just there was no connection for me. I had this gut feeling where I was like, ew, that's, oh, no, like it's, I don't resonate with that. It doesn't resonate with me. And it was always these, it was almost like a comical representation of what trans people look like. It's always a really manly woman or just someone who, like, that was just the general representation. Not that I'm saying that, you know, manly women don't exist. That, that is an actual thing. And, you know, some trans people obviously don't choose to transition hormonally or have surgeries or that kind of thing. So they often, you know, represent that specific demographic, and there's a space for people to be who they are that way. So yeah.
So going back to the beginning, I didn't introduce you as a trans woman because it's not my story, it's yours.
Yeah.
And I wanted you to get us to that point. But when you were little and you say you were different, what was that? Did you know that this was not right? Like how I look and how I feel don't match? Like, what is that in a very like layman's terms feeling? Like, what was that?
Yeah, so that's generally called dysphoria, which funnily enough is how psychologists and psychiatrists used to do things, where if you wanted to access hormones or access treatment, you needed to be diagnosed with gender dysphoria. But it's not something that all trans people necessarily experience. I mean, I had dysphoria mainly with the genitals. I want to say it was God-given, but I mean, it was a mistake on his part, to be honest. But yeah, so that's something that people generally do experience. I've always been quite feminine looking. So, I mean, I had those instances where people were like, what are you? Like, you know, and I'd have to sort of go into the spiel of describing, I am a boy, which also never really sat right, having to tell people that, but I had to sort of describe myself that way because that is all I knew, essentially. So for me, like, I always looked quite feminine. I had a very slim frame. So it wasn't that hard for me to almost, like, as I started transitioning, pass really well, like, look okay, almost cis. But so dysphoria is something that a lot of people experience. And it either starts with, for some people, and for me specifically, I was always uncomfortable with the hardware that I was given at
birth. You can say all the words here. This is your platform. If you want to say them, you can say them.
Yeah, no, I'd say hardware because I'm also uncomfortable using the word penis in reference to myself.
Okay.
Like it makes me a little bit uncomfortable, but I guess that is technically what it is. So I think even from the age of 3, like, my mom and I had this discussion like recently where I actually explained to her that there was a reason at the age of 3 I told her, like, I'm capable, and why I sort of learned to bathe myself in a way where I was like, I don't want you in the room when this is happening. Like, I prefer to do it on my own. So at the age of 3, I was sort of, you know, precocious enough to be like, I'm fine. You can leave me. I'll do it myself. Like, I have the ability to wash myself. I don't need you guiding me. And that was my first sort of inkling into uncomfortability. And, you know, I think for a lot of trans people, when they do realize, that realization comes so quickly and then everything sort of makes sense. Like, there's a stark realization of, I'm uncomfortable with this because I don't feel comfortable in this body that I have. And a lot of things make sense. So when, you know, when I think in grade 1 or something, one of the teachers told my mom, and she said, you know, he doesn't hang out with the boys, he only hangs out with girls. And the teacher told my mom to sort of reprimand me and tell me that I need to spend more time to sort of socialize with boys. And I was like, why? Boys are stupid, you know, they have very little cognitive ability and able to engage in conversation. I don't want to be running around playing Rover Rover. It's not the thing for me. You know, I'd rather be sitting around on the playground having my lunch and having a, you know, a classic conversation. And if that's ascribed to boys, then I want no part in it. So that was quite interesting. And that's something that I think trailed with me throughout my schooling, which was interesting, because why are we policing children and telling them who and what they should be hanging out with? That to me also just does not make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
And I think for a large part as well, my family is quite Christian and they're very religious, but that sort of religious rhetoric that comes in where, you know, we need to stick with, like, boys need to be socializing with boys and girls, and always the separation of here's the boys line, here's the girls line.
Pink and
I think
blue.
It's so pink and blue, and it's so unnecessary. I mean, I've always been a person who's into black. Like, I don't even, what's the consideration for pink and blue? Where? Like, can we do better? Like, in my daily life now, I make a point, if someone I know is having a baby, I make a point of it to only give them white, gray, and black items of clothing for kids. I refuse for this pink and blue nonsense. You know, a child should be able to decide for themselves, I feel. You know, kids these days are, they've got access to so much information on TikTok and socials or wherever they're engaging with content. But, you know, they're able to self-identify with who and what they feel they might be. And for parents and religious organizations and for just other people in general to make this decision on behalf of the child, you know, like, I get, obviously there are harmful things, like children shouldn't be, you know, playing with knives and trying to cut themselves or those kind of things, but within limits. I mean, for a child to decide, like, I like this, and it changes because children are, like, learning, and as they learn they realize more and more about themselves. But, like, let kids explore, let kids be children.
Yeah.
So it was quite funny for me that at every point there was an adult telling me, no, no, no,
wow,
no, no, no. To the point where my distrust in adults was obviously at an all-time high, to the point of, like, me going and telling my parents, like, it's fine, I don't really need any help applying for university or going to university. I can do it myself. Like, anything that you can do, I have the ability to do. I probably know more than you because I research more than you, and I'm interested in doing sort of research on my own. So that, I think, was interesting, and a big journey of discovery for me on my own, which is important. And you know, I always had this sense that my parents would disown me because it's such a common thing that happens when people eventually do come out or come to their senses. That was my biggest fear, and the only reason I never really told my parents what was happening. When I knew and I started medically transitioning, I sort of did it on my own. But my father picked it up. He's one of those curious people as well who did his own research, and he sort of was like, you just need to tell your mom. I think it's important that you let your mom in on what's happening in your life. And I said, no, you know, it's your wife. You deal with her. You tell her what it is you know, and we can go from there. We can have a conversation once everyone's been informed. But it's also not my responsibility. I don't think at any point is it anyone's responsibility to have to inform someone else about their own life. Like, if you're interested, you can ask, and I can refuse to answer, or I can answer you in a way that I think benefits me in this engagement, because you're the one who wants to know, not me.
Can I ask you, Sho, going through, like, formative things like high school and starting to date and, like, enjoying the company of a certain group of people, right? I enjoyed everyone's company. I'm just going to be straight up and tell you that. But when that happens to you, I obviously I'm projecting because it's not my lived experience, it's yours. But I can only imagine how frustrating it must be for people to refer to you with the slurs that they would, because you aren't that. You're not acting in that capacity within yourself, right? You're not gay. You're straight. You're in the wrong body. I'm dating boys, but I'm not a boy. Is that not very frustrating? And, like, can you explain that dynamic to me?
So I think it's interesting that you bring this up, because for you know, in primary school when kids started showing interest in, let's say, the opposite sex or whichever sex they were interested in, it was always strange for me to admit to other people, like, I had a crush on this one and that one, because even just knowing that made me a little bit uncomfortable, and that the identity of being gay just didn't sit right with me. And for a large portion of my life, even if someone asked, what are you? Like, are you a boy? Are you a girl? I'd always just say, I'm an alien. It's, you know, it is what it is. I don't know. I haven't figured it out. It's not important. And that sort of limited me from even engaging a lot, let's say sexually or in dating, up until I was in varsity and had actually figured it out for myself and come out, which is then another whole big hurdle as well. And I think it's interesting because in high school, my parents were very much still of the idea that there might be an opportunity or there might be a chance that I might still, like, be straight and just be very effeminate.
Okay.
And it was interesting because I think at that point I was really interested in a girl, which is, yeah, I was really interested in a girl, but in a way where I was appreciating her beauty, and my mom sort of took it, you know, she's like, why didn't you do anything? Why didn't you engage? So they were kind of very encouraging. I mean, I come from a family who's also very, like, sexually free. So it's not something that's sort of taboo to discuss or uncomfortable. But yeah, she sort of just questioned me. She was like, why didn't you? And I was like, I don't know. It's, you know, like, just didn't feel normal. It didn't feel right. And I think even for me as a trans person, there's a thing that happens when a lot of trans people transition, is that oftentimes their sexuality changes. And it has a lot to do with you being comfortable in your own body and space. So what happened for me was I was mainly attracted to men. There would be women now and then that I'd be like, oh, so attractive, would vibe. But I never really pursued anything. I did obviously dabble, like, she is a little slutty, or she was. So we, I definitely...
All, we must all live, guys. We must all live.
Yeah.
You don't know. Like, you've got to, like, try everything, you know? In order
exactly.
To...
Try before you buy is what I always say.
Yeah.
So I definitely experimented, explored in high school. But it always felt strange because, you know, it was either with boys at school. I stayed at a boarding house. So it was sort of co-ed, and there was a girls' boarding house and a boys' boarding house. But I did experiment in high school with some boys who were obviously straight, but I think even in the back of their mind, they did not see me as a guy, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then with some gay men, I did experiment. But as I started transitioning because I think transition is an ongoing process and we're all constantly changing, but when I started my medical transition, let's put it that way, as things physically started aligning for me much better and I felt a bit more comfortable in my own body, I was able to see myself or visualize myself with another woman, which was an interesting thing for me. I think hand size has always been an issue where I'd always be like, if I'm dating a woman or if I'm engaging in things with a woman, I don't want to appear masculine or manly in relation to said person. I'd prefer it if we were both viewed as women together. That sits better with me. So to the point where now I can say that I'm bisexual, although I am in a relationship with a man, you know, there is now that sense of comfortability. And I think once, you know, I do have gender confirmation surgery, it might even change even more, where I might only exclusively be interested in women. And it's a thing that happens quite often for trans people. I mean, so many trans people date men while they're transitioning, early transition, or trans women specifically, and then end up, you know, exclusively dating women, or opening that up and, you know, identifying as pansexual and dating everyone under the sun. So for me, largely men, and I mean that trans men, cisgendered men, and, you know, the occasional woman here and there who I do tend to find attractive. But I wouldn't even limit myself to that. I think I could put myself in the umbrella of pansexual and say that, you know, I do genuinely like people for who they are, and I'm attracted to people for who they are, as opposed to what they do have between their legs, because I can't sit here and say to you that I have these preferences, but then expect someone else to look at me and then say, I could never date you because you have a, you know, you have a penis.
Yeah. Okay.
For now.
We're going to get there. Because I know, obviously, and I just want to say this, because I feel like a lot of people are going to be quite like attacky about this podcast in general. And I would just like to say that this conversation is Shura's experience, and yours might be different, and that's okay. That's absolutely 100% okay. There are many, many different ways and means that you could be comfortable within your body. And just because Shura isn't, it doesn't mean that there is any dislike or hate or trolling or any kind of like any ill feeling towards anyone who's comfortable with the way that they are, right?
Absolutely. Your hardware and your body and your experience and your journey is your own.
Yeah.
This is only mine. Yeah.
Okay. So coming out. Now, this is something that I've spoken about at length, because before we do this, I have a question for you. Is it a privilege to be more feminine? And what did you said you had not appeared? You said you could pass. Is that what you, is that the
oh, privilege? Yeah, pass. Yeah.
Is that a privilege?
Yeah. People say it's a privilege, and I think it is. It's a privilege when it comes to violence that trans people face, that you can move seamlessly through a space that is a cisgendered normal space, quotation marks, huggies, put that heavily there,
yeah.
A normal space where there are no other trans people, and can move through that space without being outed or being, you know, sort of the weird, strange person in the room where people, you know, say, oh, that's the trans person, you can see. So it makes it easier navigating those kind of spaces, and I think it does lessen the chance of you being a victim of violence or a hate crime if you're moving through those spaces. So yeah, I think in that sense, for sure, but passing is... I'm so over this whole like passing thing, because what does it matter? You know, it's your experience. It's your life. It's your body. You know, it should be valued at all times, and passing should never be the goal. I mean, it should never be the goal. You should be comfortable with what you look like and how you present yourself. And I know that for a lot of trans people, you know, physically changing your appearance is one thing, but then also the voice, I think, is a thing that people get stuck on, because often if people have gone through a male puberty or a female puberty and have then transitioned, for people who are assigned female at birth and then transition to male, it's much easier because testosterone will make your voice drop, whereas the reverse is not possible, because your voice is already broken, your vocal cords are thickened, and you know, you have to have an actual surgery to thin those vocal cords again so that you're able to speak at a higher pitch or go through vocal training, which is tough. It's something I've never had to do, because I've always sounded like this, blessed in a sense, like blessed beyond compare. If I consider myself and I compare myself to other trans women I engage with, I really am blessed in that I've always sort of sat on the border between masculine and feminine. And like, I like to describe it as when I went through puberty, my voice never dropped. My vocal range just expanded to the point where I can now speak at, like, this is how I speak in general, but I can also speak like that if I wanted to. Kind
sexy
of thing.
As fuck. Why are you not a voiceover artist? Look at your,
oh, but
you
she
look
is,
at your range.
Though.
I know. I was giving you shit. I know. Yes. Okay. Back to the coming out. I completely agree with you, in the sense that I don't feel like like there should be balloons and glitter and like, oh, this is what I am. Because that's also very fluid. But I come from a place of immense privilege where it wasn't ever questioned. You could date whomever you wanted and bring them for dinner on a Friday night. And it was just like, oh, that's Danny's girlfriend or that's Danny's boyfriend. You know, it was never questioned. So I have to ask you, coming out as trans, I feel like, and you can check me on this, but I feel like it would be more acceptable for many families if you just came out as gay. Because trans means a lot. And going back to what you said earlier, and I remember this, and I don't come from a problematic family, but I remember people when I was growing up being referred to as transvestites. And I remember them kind of being like the pariah of the town. And when you saw them, like everyone would stare. I vividly remember that. And I can only think that even in my non-problematic family, I mean, I can't put anything on them, but isn't it harder to come out as trans? What do you say?
Eek. It's, I mean, I speak from a place of privilege on this as well, where my dead name has just been like shortened to become Sher. So I'm not going to give it away, but like, it's really obvious. People who know me know what it is. They won't ever call me that, but they know what it is. So people had just started calling me Sher anyways when I started presenting a bit more feminine, which made it quite easy. I'd just go Sher, and then I think the movement was really like up in arms of people needing to be accepting of trans people around the time. And I think I've only said I'm trans to a therapist, and that was it. The rest of my friends sort of just jumped on the bandwagon. I sort of changed all my profiles and things on socials. And I just was like, yeah, cool. And then just started posting content about trans people, as opposed to like making it official and being like having sit downs. And that's sort of, I think, also how my father was doing his own research on YouTube, which was a great source for me in like my first year of varsity, where I also was like, I guess I'm trans. Yeah, that makes sense to me. It feels right. It's the first sort of label that had stuck for me. And my father was doing his own research to the point where he came and he was sent me an SMS and said, very old school SMS, jeez. Sent me an SMS and said, it's probably time you have a conversation with your mother. I'd already known that he was researching this in between some of my visits when I went home. I knew that he was researching it because I used to use his phone. You know, dad's always got the data. So I was using his phone, watching videos, and I checked some of his like history, and he was watching, you know, videos about trans people and trying to obviously learn and understand for himself, because I think he sort of, they've always had an inkling, they've always known. So he ended up telling my mom, and then subsequently they told the rest of the family. Like, I've never had a sit down conversation with any of my nuclear family or extended family about it. The only conversations we have had is them inquiring about sort of like hormones, how it works, surgeries, what I would be interested in. This is quite weird, and I hope my sister doesn't see this, but so I have my eldest niece, she's also a little bit more on the masculine side of life, and my sister was like, yeah, well, if you know, if she is, then at least like we have you as a sort of like backup, which is a good thing. And I think it's interesting, because not only am I now the representation I wish I had seen in my own life, but I could be that for someone else. Not saying that, you know, they may or may not be trans, but I think it'll be easier in future for people to come out because of that sort of representation. But coming out as a whole is just, it's so taxing. Why does it have to be an event? Why do we have to now, like, we can just do it one-on-one. I usually do this because there are still people that did name me and use the wrong pronouns. And these are mostly people from primary school or people I don't engage with at all, but I'd often see them at events and that kind of thing. And it's kind of like, ugh, why would you be referring to this gorgeous, stunning woman as he and by a totally different name? And I'm usually so uncomfortable that I'll leave the conversation, because to me, being misgendered and dead named is such a strange concept in that very rarely does it happen. But when it does, I'm just stumped. Like, there are trans people who obviously experience it on the daily and then have great comebacks for being dead named or being misgendered. But for me, it's such an uncomfortable thing that I prefer to just step away, walk away, ignore, stay away, skirt around edges, away from those people, and then send them a message on Instagram and be like, I feel like it was really uncalled for. You follow me on Instagram.
You're just being
like clueless to what is happening right in front of you. But yeah, like, I don't think like people should be making this big a deal of coming out, because like, do we have to come out about everything? That straight
this
people
is my,
have to
this
come
is
out
my
then,
argument.
You know? Like, you need to tell me that you're straight then.
Yeah,
or not like, you, but
yeah,
you know.
Exactly. Or like, I'm gonna never have children, or I'm thinking of getting a puppy. Everyone on my Instagram, I'm identifying as getting a fucking puppy. Like, I'm here for it. Like, if you feel that you want to and you need to, you should. I just don't see the point of like society expecting it of you, because it has absolutely nothing to do with anyone.
Yeah,
at all, actually. Because essentially, it doesn't matter to me what you identify as long as I don't fuck up your pronouns, which you'll tell me if I do. That's all I care about. I just want you to be happy, that's all. But you see, maybe we are definitely speaking from a place of privilege, because we don't have people that refuse, you know, like refuse.
Yeah.
Axel nie. I will not. It's against everything I stand for. I'm like, it's two words. You can just say it's just a word. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't take anything away from your day to use someone's correct pronouns if that's what they would like. Like, it's easy.
But I think this is a thing. Like, I live in an echo chamber of queer people and straight people who are queer allies, to the point of I'm so distanced from the fact that this does happen, where people are homophobic, transphobic, whatever other phobic under the sun, so distanced from it that when I do actually encounter it in real life, I'm just like shook and stumped. Like, what? Yeah. In 2021? It's like, it's shocking to me. But I guess that it is the reality for some people. Funny story. I feel like I need to add this in there. It has nothing to do with being trans or whatever, but went to meet a friend. There were more than five people, which was uncomfortable. Only wanted to see two of the people. Ended up there, and the one friend says, I'm so proud of this girl. She's white. She's Afrikaans. So proud of her. She came from a homophobic family that's also a little bit racist, and she... you know, she is now so accepting in her own life. And I was like, really? Are we congratulating white people for the bare minimum at this point? Like, the bare minimum, like common decency.
Yeah.
She got really offended. I was like, of all people, please, bitch. Like, relax. No need to be offended. He got offended. He's a gay man, person of color. The other white people at the table around me, like, no, for what? And I was like, thank you for vindicating what or backing up what I'm saying. We don't need to be congratulating people for having common decency. I get that, you know, your background that you come from, your people may not be accepting of certain things, but that doesn't have to impact your life. You're an adult, a grown person, can make your own decisions. You decide whether or not you want to be prejudiced towards other people based on gender, sexuality, race, etc.
Religion, beliefs.
Whatever. Not your background. Like, I'm not going to congratulate you for the bare minimum.
Shit, sure. I've done a lot of good in my life. I would like some congratulations at some point, man.
Congratulations,
at what
Danny.
Fucking point?
You're a successful voiceover artist, presenter. You're just a queer ally. You're just a safe space for all of us.
Yeah, no, I just want to, you know, it's, Wow. That shocks me. That shocks me and it angers me because like there were people that were like, yes, she deserves, and there are going to be like the people that are going to go, but she does deserve it.
Yeah.
And no, guys, because the bar is fucking low then. The bar is low. If you need to be congratulated for accepting people for who they are, then the bar is too low and we need to like raise that.
The bar is on the ground. The bar is on the ground. It absolutely is at this point.
I want to talk to you about transitioning and hormones because I find this highly interesting. I really want to talk about this. But one more question about your youth and like going back home. Mm. When you go back home, how has your mom and your dad dealt with like pictures? Because my mother's whole house is just fucking pictures. And Sandy would die if she had to like pack them away.
Okay, so I'm a person of color. My family, you know, they've got that one picture of the baby. So it'll be my sister's kids and so on and so forth. The rest are in albums.
Okay.
I'm not too triggered by like childhood photos of me. It is my life. It was who I mean, I'll say I have always been trans. I just did not realize it. And that is obviously still me.
Okay.
So like, I'm not embarrassed by the pictures or that sort of thing. It is me. It is who I am, but it wasn't that big of an issue because my people are not people that like to display images, you know, like I'm not that kind of person. And I think it comes from the way I grew up where, you know, we keep it in an album and let's say on Sunday, we're having cake and tea. Let's go down memory lane. Let's bring out the albums. Let's laugh. Let's set the scene of what was happening in this picture. So it's more that.
Okay.
As opposed to where, so one thing my family do love though is like medals and awards and trophies and that sort of thing, which I have tons of because I was an academic assassin back in the day.
Cool.
So there are tons of those, but it's sort of like placed while some of the names hidden, just so that I'm not uncomfortable, but I'm really not uncomfortable because it's not something I even pick up. You know,
okay.
Like I'm supposed to have a high school reunion at some point soon-ish, which is quite weird because I intend asking them if they can change the plaque, all the plaques that have my name on it to just like, I mean, it's easy. It's just three letters. Just swipe them away.
You want to go to a high school reunion for the plaques. I don't think I'll get invited to my high school reunion because I was such a troublemaker. You're here like with fucking things on the wall and stuff. My gosh, Sharon, look at you go.
She killed it back in the day. She killed it. Now she's just a mediocre capitalist slave.
No, that's why you're here. You see, you killed it back in the day so that you could like, you know, the children that are really good in school, the parents always say like, if they behave too well in school, they're going to fall off the rails sometime. You're in media.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you see, at least I don't think I peaked though. I think in high school, I definitely was a little bit sassy, a little bit feisty. And I think it was because I definitely was obviously trying to mask, subconsciously trying to mask something. So I wouldn't, like, I did really well at school, but I would not say that all the teachers liked me because, to be quite honest, I'm a little bit cunty. People who know me know that I get a little bit feisty. Like if things don't sit well with me, I'll open my mouth. I'm not about to sit there and, you know, let injustice happen or, but also I think the one teacher that did like me sort of let me get away with a lot of stuff. Even the school entirely just let me get away with a lot of stuff. I mean, we weren't allowed to grow out our hair. I definitely did that. We were supposed to wear school shoes. I definitely wore Mr. Price espadrilles and changed those to my school shoes. They were just more comfy. They looked better.
Wow.
You know, I did a lot of things I wasn't supposed to. Dyeing your hair, I went ham.
Wow. I think that your feistiness and your mouth is one of your best qualities because you, in the times that we've been together online or wherever, you have definitely allowed me to see that I have space to stand up and speak words and take up space and say no. So that I have to give you props for that. I think that you don't realize how much change you affect within the people that are around you. But okay, so speaking about change, this interests me very much because in the hetero cis community, like We want a lot of things, right? We want to be thin. We want to look like Britney Spears. We want R1 million. None of us are willing to fucking put in any work for it. Like, we just kind of want it to just appear, right?
Yeah.
You are actively changing your entire life from your name to your hardware to the software, because you're going to be on hormones for, I don't know, you'll tell me. You're actively doing all of the things, and I just feel like we really should be more inspired by the trans community, because fucking you guys will do anything to be what you want. And I can't even lose 5 kilograms. So
yeah,
what is, not that I'm comparing that at all. The struggle is not the same at all.
No, it's not, but it's comparable, I guess. So
you decide you want to transition.
Yeah.
What is the, where to from here?
So I think when I started, they had a different sort of medical model that they used, which was you need to be diagnosed with having gender dysphoria by the DSM-5 or whatever it was. So basically they would diagnose you with mental disorder, gender dysphoria, and then you could access hormones and someone would prescribe it to you. But you'd have to have like therapy sessions and so on and so forth. Now it's obviously changed. There's the informed consent model that they're using, which means you go and see your doctor tells you what the risks are, and you say it's fine, you sign on the dotted line and you have access. But the problem in this country is that in other countries, like the UK and America, access to hormones and that sort of thing is free, or it's covered by your insurance, whereas in this country it isn't, if your legal documents don't match your presentation of gender. So the medical aids in this country won't cover that sort of thing, which means that you either then have to go through one of two places, which is the VITS RHI, which they only cover a very small portion of the country, or through Groteskeet in Cape Town, where you can obviously access hormones for free. They only prescribe a specific type of hormone for trans women, being pills or patches, which is estrogen, and then they'll prescribe you blockers, which blocks testosterone. And for trans men, they'll prescribe testosterone. I'm not too sure about the kind of testosterone they prescribe, because I know that testosterone is mostly just available in injectable form. But you only need a T shot. I'm not gonna answer on that, because no. I have very little experience. But for me, I had a session and then was recommended to go to a GP. So because I didn't want to sit and wait on a waiting list at Groteskeet to wait for hormones, I went directly to a doctor and she prescribed me. So you can go to your GP and they are allowed to prescribe you estrogen. All doctors should have access to a little book that tells you what to prescribe for what. So she put me on patches, which was very low dose and sort of starting, which you change every few days, or you pop a new one on and it releases estrogen through the skin. Then I was quite a little bit sick of that, and she recommended that we switch to pills, which is perfectly fine, but I hate taking pills. Think of it as like taking birth control every single morning. Yeah. And in this case, it's not every single morning. I would split my dosage, because it makes it easier, because estrogen in pill form has a 12-hour half-life. It only works for 12 hours, so you've got to take it. So if you take it at 8 in the morning, it's best to then take it at 8 at night again, just before you go to bed. So pills is another one. And also, because it's a pill, it has to go through your system, and then it has to be sort of worked through by your liver, which then can impact your liver health. So that was not an option that I was willing to be on for longer than however long. I think I must have been on for 6 months. And I'm now, I have a doctor who is also trans, which is really great, because she understands, there's this guideline by the WPATH, WPATH or whatever, the international organization, and they sort of make recommendations based on how trans people should be cared for and what sort of treatment they should be offered. But my doctor, because she is trans herself and she is on quite a couple of online forums that I'm on, she's aware of sort of niche research or what other physicians are saying, what works best. So she has access as well to prescribing injectable estrogen, which is what I use now, and it's once a week. I inject once a week, and I'm good to go for the rest of the week. She also prescribes blockers. Usually they prescribe blockers, but once you've been on injectable estrogen for long enough, you'd no longer require blockers because estrogen will act to lower the level of testosterone in your body anyway. Your testosterone produces testicles no longer basically function. I can tell you that it's a struggle to even find them. If I had to go looking for them, they've like shrunk, they're almost non-existent, which is great, like relieving dysphoria, minimizing what it costs to like tack. But hormones are great in that some of the things that it does is, so one of the first things you'll notice is like softening of skin, slowing like hair growth, which happened for me. Like my family quite hairy, so I used to be quite hairy, but, or not hairy, the hair was quite dark, but it's lightened quite a bit now. And what else happens? So the one thing that I hated was that I used to get veins that pop out over here when it was too hot or whatever. And so estrogen obviously fills your skin layer. So like natal females will have a fat layer under their skin, which obviously then minimizes the appearance of those veins, yeah. Which if I pinch my skin now, it's pretty much like it used to be just like super skinny, but now the fat layer is there. So it's great. And then obviously breast growth, which happens over time, and then fat redistribution throughout the body. But because estrogen is fat soluble, if you are someone who, like me, was quite skinny, you might pick up a little bit of weight. So it's good to sort of like keep your exercise routine going, but it's also really nice because you'll pick up weight and you can turn it into muscle. So you can sort of like shape your body as you go along if you're not wanting to have any surgeries, which is, I'm not interested in having like any other bodily surgery besides bottom surgery. Like I'm cool with a 90s model flat chest. Like it's my aesthetic, it's my vibe. Yeah. And, you know, just fixing the bottom and maybe having a nose job because I do like the aesthetic of like a skinny little nose. But those are kind of things that your doctor would recommend. If you want to have surgery, go on hormones for a couple of years, see what it does for you because it works different for everyone. So in terms of like breast growth, they'll usually ask you what cup size and is your mom or your sister. So they'll ask you about your family history, because that sometimes will indicate how you may develop. Wow. So if your family is quite large, a lot of trans women will develop larger breasts. My family, unfortunately, you know, they were all 90s models. It's not for me, but it's fine because now I have a bum, which I did not really have before. Like it's, the juice just went to go and sit there. And it really does, so those are just physical changes, but there's a sense of alignment that happens inside you when you go on, like when I went on estrogen, there was just a sense of calm and peace that I experienced. And it's something that people don't really even discuss because it's just anecdotal evidence. Like it's not evidence that you could really provide to a research facility, but it's something that's so common amongst trans people that the sense of relief, comfort, and just like alignment you feel, like inner peace, it's quite overwhelming. Mm.
Sure. Will you have to take it for the rest of your life?
Yes. So you will have to take it for the rest of your life. If you do stop, the changes won't be reversed. So if I do stop taking estrogen, the changes won't be reversed, but I mean, my body will then start producing testosterone again and that sort of thing. Unless obviously you go and have what they call an orchiectomy, which is just removing your testicles. So it's usually what they do to men who have testicular cancer or whatever. But yeah, so it's funny because like a warning that they obviously give trans women is that your bone density will decrease and your muscle mass will lower. And some people have to end up taking supplements because you know, it's a thing that happens to women is that your bone density decreases, and taking estrogen obviously has that same impact. So like, I can attest to the fact that like things just are super cranky, have been super cranky since like a year after starting estrogen. Imagine me, estrogen. But the changes are so slight and slow that it takes quite a while for you to even notice that anything's happening. Like, it's not something you'll be able to see within a day's time, but you can feel the alignment happening spiritually. Yeah.
You know what? You smile when you say that, but I think that that's the most important part, because I think as long as you feel in alignment with yourself, how you got there doesn't matter. Whether it's placebo or not, whether it's in your head or not, you're there. And so that's all that fucking matters. Okay, so talk to me about bottom surgery, because this is the reason that you're on the show. We want to raise all of the money in the world to get her to go and get her bottom surgery.
Mm-hmm.
I watched some things on this and fuck me, dude, I hope they give you good drugs, because my god, just watching it I was like, fuck no.
Yeah.
Okay, so talk to me about where, how, and like, I know some people don't do it.
Yeah.
You've obviously been dysphoric about that forever, so.
Yeah, that's actually just been my like main problem issue in life, It's since day one, as a child even, it was the one thing I was like, I tried snipping it off as a child. Like, it was one of those traumatic things that sometimes happen to really dysphoric children who detest their hardware. It's one of those things where I go to the bathroom and don't look down. Like, it's like I look up, I sort of just use my hands, and I'm like, oh, cool. Cool. In the shower, I usually just try avert my eyes. If I'm in the mirror and I don't have pants on, I'm usually just like, thank God the basin only goes up until fucking like my hip height. Thank goodness. So it's one of those things where like, I don't think people understand that dysphoria like hits. It's one of those things. It's constantly with you. You're constantly aware of it. So I could be sitting somewhere and I'd be looking around, but I'm also like internally fixated on the fact that I may need to like adjust my pants, go to the bathroom. I have a very weak bladder as it is, but I go to the bathroom sometimes, not even to use the bathroom, just to fix what might be happening downstairs. So it's a point of great uncomfortability for me that I've obviously now had to live with for 27 years of my life, but the end is in sight. So I have started a Backer Buddy, which has really been... Backer Buddy is one of those platforms that I think is so great at helping just average South Africans do the things. I mean, crowdfunder?
Yeah.
The big international one is...
Yeah.
Yeah, it was sort of the basis, but I think Backer Buddy is such a great South African platform, and they really do help you make the most of your campaign. So I started mine about 3 months ago, which it was really important for me to do. I was sort of debating whether or not I should do it, because it's something I'm like so uncomfortable speaking about, that putting that information out there on the internet it's kind of scary. But yeah, thanks to the help of like some of my compadres who are also trans and really encouraging me to actually put my story out there and make sure that people know that this is something that's been bothering me since I was a bambino, a baby. It's something I've obviously been looking forward to, and I've done tons and tons of research, and this is one of those things where you have to sort of do a lot of research to find out what it is you want, and who can give that to you. So for, let's say if I had started hormones or blockers before puberty and then went through and then did not go through puberty because I was a blockers and then started hormones at the age of 16 or 18, the hardware downstairs would have been non-existent, which means I would have had to take a different approach because it would have shrunk and been really tiny, and I would have had to go to a specialized type of surgeon, which probably would have cost more.
Okay.
But I intend going to Thailand because Thailand is synonymous with trans people.
I wasn't going to go.
I mean, it's just there. It's, you know, these things, they don't write themselves. It's like that for a reason. And I think because of Thailand's culture, obviously people are way more open to trans people. I won't use the names that they call people there, but that's a certain debate for another day. So because of that, South Africa surprisingly used to be at the forefront of transgender surgeries way back when. Like in the 1970s, they were actually at the forefront of that research, but because funding and, you know, Bruder Bond energy, none of that sort of, we didn't keep going, which just sort of like plateaued and then dropped a little bit. But so Thailand surgeons are really at the forefront of trans medicine in terms of producing great aesthetics, function, and giving you a good, not only a good deal because it's so much cheaper. So like if you compare the surgery in South Africa versus in Thailand, it comes to about 200,000 rand for the surgery alone. That's for your 5 days and stay in the hospital. You're paying for an anesthesiologist, you're paying for your doctor, you're paying for your nurse who comes to get you, you're paying for, you know, these doctors have set up centers where they have someone who comes to get you at the airport, drops you off at the hotel, they do checkups, they do all these things. So that's all included in the cost, whereas in South Africa it's about 250,000 rand.
With none of
that. And that's just for your hospital stay. And then after that, they send you home, check, go look after yourself. See you in a month for checkup or if you need anything.
Okay.
So the level of care that they actually have in Thailand is one of the things. And then also the techniques. So when it comes to bottom surgery for trans women, there's a couple of techniques. The oldest one is what is called like penile inversion, where they essentially just take the original hardware that you have, they remove some of the outer penile skin, they use some of that erectile tissue, and they like make a new little hole. They turn the penis basically inside out and put it inside of you. And that is now your, and then they create the outer, the labia majora and whatever. They do that. So like if we start at the beginning, when you were still a cell developing into a fetus, the genital area is generally the same until sort of your whichever chromosome kicks in. If you're a male, you'll develop male genitalia, right? So which means like in science it's called like analogous things, right? I think it's analogous or homologous. Anyways, they come from the same thing, right? So the vagina and the penis have parts that would have originally come from the same thing.
Yes.
If it developed, but yeah.
Yeah.
So what these doctors now are doing with the newer techniques is they're essentially using that same material and a little bit of something else to create your designer vagina.
Okay.
So this is now no longer penile inversion. They use some of the tissue that you have down there. They create a clitoris, a clitoral hood, your labia majora, your labia minora. The positioning is obviously very different from where penis is. It's quite lower down, so that sort of thing happens. But because your genital area is so highly vascularized because of all the nerves that you have there, right? So there's a lot of blood flowing there. So it seems like a surgery that would be quite painful and hard to recover from. It's actually quite quick because there's so much blood flowing through there. So it means the healing does take significantly quicker than if you were to chop your leg off, so to speak. So it's interesting. And the doctor that I've chosen is Dr. Chetherworth or Dr. Sue Bourne, because they deliver the best aesthetic results. And they also have one free sort of correction that you can come and have. So let's say in a year's time after having had surgery and there's something you'd like to fix, or you've been watching porn and you saw a vagina and you were like, I want my girl to look like that. She we needs all do to have that.
I'm telling you that that is a very slippery slope, my friend. No, don't do yeah. it because no, we all want those.
Yeah. No, so that's sort of the thing. And the reason they sort of have this cosmetic revision is just so that in case, let's say during healing, something healed a little bit weirdly, they can fix it. And there's usually what happens because you have surgery and you stay in this little center that they keep you in, and then you've got to stay for 30 days in recovery so the doctor can check up on you and they can teach you to do dilation, which is essentially to make sure that the internal vaginal cavity stays open while healing so it doesn't close out the outside, right? And so that your internal, so like your pelvic floor can accommodate the fact that there is now a hole, you have to dilate to sort of like teach those muscles that we are now a vagina and we are, yeah. So the dilation is something they obviously teach you, but what happens because they do dilation, if you look at your own vagina when you go down, closer to where your backside is, your lips will meet in what is called a posterior commissure, right? So they can't create one like that when you are having your first surgery, because essentially you've got to be dilating. And if they did do that, you'd
rip.
Tear that piece of skin, and because you're continuously putting something inside of you. So that's usually what people go back for fresh, so fresh. It needs to look fresh. So Thailand was always my first option, I think, just because they are at the forefront of trans medicine. And I think when it comes to these sort of things, trans people often always want the best, the newest, the hottest thing.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, for me, it's also just like, I want to make sure that I'll have a successful surgery, that I don't have any major complications, and that the surgeon I am with gives a damn about who I am as an individual and
what you want.
You know, and if he's been in this industry for so long and, you know, he's seen trans women come and go, and he cares individually about that. So that, I think, has also been a major reason of me going to Thailand, because I know that the standard of care there is so high when it comes to trans medicine.
Are you going to be able to experience orgasm?
Yeah. So,
that's like my biggest concern. Like, that's the only thing that
Same.
I want. Like, I really want you to, you know, do you know what I'm saying?
Everyone worries about this. I'm like, it's still like, essentially what they do is they retain nerves and it's just repositioned. So essentially, you know, your nerve endings just become your clitoris, and you know, some of the nerve endings are left at the entrance of the vagina. It really just depends on how your body heals. So I heal pretty well. I have a very like high pain threshold, so I tend to not experience pain when, you know, most people would be like, "Oh, that hurts." Oh, no, not really. Okay. So I think the only thing that I've heard people mention that's quite painful is when the nerve endings have to sometimes rejoin during recovery, which you can sort of feel, and it's often like a continuous stinging sensation in like your clitoris or whichever part as, you know, the nerve endings are rejoining. So yeah, and I reckon that from what I've read and from other people's experiences, people have had like orgasms within like 3 weeks of just having surgery, and it's quite,
holy shit, okay,
it's quite intense. But as you know from your own orgasms, they're slightly different from male orgasms, which are all sort of like interlinked between not only your nerve endings but your body being hormonally a specific way. So if you are hormonally female, I can say now that my orgasms now are longer and less boom, you know? It used to be kind of like boom and it's done.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's sort of like slow reverberation. Sometimes it builds, sometimes it blunts for longer. It's more full body, more head high.
God, we're so lucky. We're so lucky.
Yeah.
We're so lucky. Much better. So much better. You've just described like male orgasms and I'm like, shame.
Meh. How boring.
Shame. How disappointing.
How boring.
Okay,
and then so they can't even go for another round until like we've got to wait.
Bruh, we're like, okay, let's go.
How boring!
How boring! You see, that's why, I was going to be very problematic in the beginning of this and say, when you were talking about how a lot of transgender people, they end up dating, especially transgender women, trans women end up dating women. And I was like, it's because they realize how problematic men are. But I wasn't gonna be problematic. And now I am. So anyway.
Poor problematies. No, but I think because they can relate to women so much more.
Oh yeah.
Or
yeah.
Not woman, but natal woman, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because I mean, we're all women, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so how far away are you from the end goal? How much money do you need?
So I currently sit at 44,600 and something,
which is about
22%. So I think there's about 156 that I still need to raise. I have taken a break at the moment from just like posting about it, because I think like inundating people constantly with the same thing is just like, it's so taxing and emotionally taxing, and I'd be sick of myself if I was the one reading all those story posts. But and I think it's really great because I raised that in 3 months. So you know, most people don't even end up raising that in having run a campaign for a year.
Yeah.
So I'm already really proud of how far it's gotten, but you know, all donations are always welcome at any point, any time, us to the goal.
I'm going to put a link to the Backer Buddy in underneath the video, in the comments of the video. But sure, I wanted to talk to you about so much more stuff. We've already spoken for an hour. So I'm going to ask you, where can we follow your journey? Because I'm assuming you're going to take us with you when you go.
Yes. Surgery.
Okay.
So my producer friend and I intend on actually recording, shooting the entire thing. So from set up in South Africa. So prior to leaving for the journey, it may or may not be a docuseries, or it may be a full documentary. I'm hoping for a docuseries. So it is in talks at the moment, but I think for us, the main thing is raising the funds first, so that we are able to actually, so we've got people who are biting at the idea, but we need to be able to, like, no one's going to fund that. I need to be able to fund that myself before going. So the project is in talks. Essentially, it will document the entire journey. You'd get to see, speak to the doctor, get to see more, a little bit more about my family. So my mom and possibly my partner, if they are up to it. Just to speak through my experiences and what exactly will be happening there, so you know, you can get an idea more clearly, an idea about what it actually entails, what it looks like. I mean, I think at that point I'll be comfortable enough to just like I don't mean the after, perhaps the before. Maybe.
No, that's also yours. I mean, it's up to you. No, I'm telling you, no, like, it's mine. Whatever you
I mean, want. We might just be able to, like, bait people and be like, for XXX content, subscribe to the OnlyFans so you can get the before and after.
No, but you know what? I don't think you're going to have to. I have a feeling that someone's going to watch this and go, shit, that would be a great docuseries and I'd like to do that. So how do we do that? Okay, so where can we follow you, and where can someone who did want to get in touch with you regarding any of this get in touch?
Yeah. So you can connect with me on Instagram and Twitter. They are the same handles. It's at Shirzest Christ. And then on Facebook, I'm Sher Pete. So CHERPETE. Yes, my surname is Peterson, and I did cut it off slightly. I did it. It was a moment of madness, and I don't wish to return now. So I'll stay there. But yeah, Shirzest Christ on Instagram and Twitter. And then on Facebook, Sher Pete. I am very, very active on Instagram, somewhat on Twitter, Facebook, mainly for work. But I'm more likely to respond to messages on Instagram or Facebook.
I want to give you the opportunity to use this platform to canvas for donations. Don't pull a face. You like, if you want to. Like,
yes.
It's your platform.
So how does one do this? What do we canvas? How do we say?
I don't know. Don't you pull at people's heartstrings? Isn't that how you?
Okay.
Make them cry.
Okay. You
feel bad and then like make them open their wallets. I don't know.
Okay. I've been on this journey for 27 years. It's been my life's journey to get to this point. It is here that I ask you to support me on this journey. Donate, share, like, boost in any way that you can to help me raise 200,000 rand to get me and my hardware to Thailand to come back with some new hardware. So make sure you click the link. It's Sher Peterson or Backer Buddy. Click it. It's for my surgery. And you can help a girl out there.
Yes. Yes. I'm sad.
I mean, I should have cried, surely.
No, I'm sad you left out the OnlyFans, but I mean, you know.
I mean, like if you wanted OnlyFans, like you can either tell me on Instagram and we can go.
I mean, do what you want to do, Sherry. Live your best life, babe. It's up to you, you know?
Nah, I kid.
Okay, well, this has been incredibly informative. I do apologize if I was at all problematic or doff, nope. But it comes from a place of love. And I do genuinely love you, and I want you to go to Thailand, and I want you to take your producer friend with you.
You know the producer friend as
I know. Well. No, I know. That's why I want you guys to go. I see. Love this journey for you. I love this journey for you guys. But good luck, Sher. And you'll come back once it's done so that you can tell me about it.
And yeah.
Unpack all of the other shit that I wanted to ask you that we ran out of time for.
Absolutely. I'll be back. I'll be black. You stay white here.
Oh, I love you. Bye.
Bye.
Remember, you can catch the full video on exotv.me and you can meet us in kind of real life. Thanks to DJ Chalk for the music. You can catch him at www.chalksprosound.co.za. New episodes on Jackpod and ExoTV every Monday. Love you.